as we look through the window of baseball, and we do it every Saturday and Sunday and in the holidays with Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, brought to you by Truett and White, the professional builder's choice, and Marvin Windows and Doors. Bruce, happy 4th to you.
Yeah, same to you, Marty. How are you today?
Very good. You know, I like the early start. It's okay. They're already playing in Washington, you know, because yeah. the Mets are already winning 1-0 there over the Nats. But it was interesting today doing the matchup. Number one, I want to talk about Michael Fulmer in a second. This guy's pretty good. But it's Matt Cain going against the Tigers, Cabrera on the other side. And, you know, Cabrera's kind of turning into the Pujols a little bit. You know, the body is starting to get a little big on him. But for Matt Cain, Bruce, you know, he's coming to the end. And as I did the open today, he did pitch a huge game in the 2012 World Series against the Tigers. And it's a big contract. We're coming to the end of it. But he has his special place in Giants history. And I think we have to remember that no matter if he's lost his last six and he's getting whacked here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's a tribute not only to what he's done for the team, but just the kind of the guy he is. He's not real loud, but he's definitely a big-time leader in that clubhouse, and he has been, you know, all through this, you know, the championship run. You know, it's a big reason they signed him to the long-term deal and the reason they hang with him. And I think he's probably provided more this year than a lot of people expected in spring training. He's pitched some great games, and, you know, this is I don't know how big of a game it is. Can you really say that? But, you know, the Giants want to keep this thing going. They'd like to rattle off like 12 in a row, you know, and at least feel good about a stretch of the season that is otherwise kind of lost. So it'll be interesting to see him today.
Yeah, and I think for him at some point, and who knows how this thing's going to go, as I say, when you win 6 in a row, it's great. You better win, as you just said, 12 out of 13.
Yeah.
And don't go backwards because, that's deadly at this stage of the season. But it is going to come to an end for him. And people have to remember what he meant to the 2010, 2012. And like you said, he's one of those pranksters. You know, if you, you know, you got to watch him in the clubhouse and stuff goes on. This guy's always in the middle of it.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's kind of the judge and jury sometimes when somebody gets out of hand. When he lays down the law, that's kind of it, you know, that you heard from on high. But if you look at his postseason record, my goodness, I mean, talk about coming through in the clutch. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're awfully, awfully good.
Yeah, no, he hadn't given up an earned run at some point.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Right, remember, I think it was some some real number. So good, I'm glad we could acknowledge him. On July 4th, I don't know, it seems like a day to celebrate a little bit. So no matter where he's at these days, I think we should remember him. On the other side is Michael Fulmer, Bruce. And again, I didn't know much about him other than the name. I know he's Rookie of the Year. But he is the Detroit Tiger pitching staff. I don't care what you say about Verlander and anybody else. This guy is really pretty good.
Yeah, Verlander's had a strange year. He's been really up and down, kind of feast or famine kind of thing. But this guy's been pretty much the rock of the rotation. You know, it hasn't been a great year for Detroit. In fact, you know, they're in last place in the Central. They're only 8 games out. You know, the Giants are 22 or whatever. But you know, you look for some silver linings, and Fulmer's definitely one of them. He's got real good stuff, and that'll be a pretty tough assignment for a Giants lineup that's finally starting to hit a little bit.
Well, if you can get him out of there, the Detroit bullpen is last in the American League. So, you know, you got to get him out. But the guy, he's gone less than 7 innings only 2 times in 10 games. He's 13 of 15 quality starts. And his last home run was 11 starts ago. How about that?
That's a good one.
That's not bad. Yeah, not bad. So we'll see. But, you know, again, the trend in baseball, Bruce, I swear we see this all the time, and that is swing early in the count. And believe it or not, for this guy, if you swing on the first pitch, 18 for 53, it's 333. You wait around till you're 0-2, 5 for 65. How about that?
Yeah, well, we've talked about this many times, and, you know, I'm a big proponent of aggressive hitting, you know, not getting yourself behind and in a vulnerable spot. You know, you look at the teams that are really, really doing it this year, particularly Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much talk about, you know, home runs are nothing, home runs are strikeouts. Well, these guys are hitting home runs that they're getting on base, and they're not striking out. I don't know the exact figures, but they're definitely nowhere near the leaders in teams that are striking out. And they're aggressive. They're fun. They get after it. And I just think that's always been a great way to approach hitting for my money. And I know. Hensley Mullins, you know, believes in that. He doesn't throw a blanket over every hitter, but more often than not, he likes guys to get after it and not get themselves in a vulnerable spot.
Well, Posey's got the confidence to do it. He does it more than anybody. You'll see him hit the first pitch because he's leading the majors. Can you believe this? He's leading the majors and hitting a catcher. How about that?
That's Ernie Lombardi. You know, I love it.
Come on. The schnoz, they played him in the shortstop played him in short left field because he couldn't run.
Manny Sanguin, you know, another guy who threatened to win. He never won one, but he was a 300 hitter. Yeah, it's terrific. I mean, I think it was a couple years ago he really adjusted his style to go after the first pitch, and he said it just made all the difference for him. And, you know, here he is in a year that people were starting to wonder, you know, how long can he catch? And, you know, he wasn't driving in runs, but all of a sudden he is so clearly the starting catcher in the All-Star game, and probably the best in the business, both leagues. It's just great.
Yeah, I think so. Joe Mauer is another catcher who won batting titles. But Posey is sort of establishing himself as the catcher of, and I know Molina is a Hall of Famer along
definitely
with him. But you got to go back to Piazza, I think, the last time someone was voted, and the catchers voted in 3 or 4 years in a row, which Posey has done.
Yeah, that's good company for sure. You know, I knew Johnny Bench would be in there. He was a fixture in the All-Star game. But and Posey loves it. You know, he's not boastful or doesn't remind anybody of what he's done. But I'm sure he takes an awful lot of pride in not only being a great defensive catcher, and we saw him make that unbelievable play the other day, which said everything you need to know about him. But you know, hitting. What's he hitting? 340?
Yeah, something 330. Close. Yeah, 339 or something.
That's just spectacular.
Today, we also acknowledge tomorrow is the actual day of Larry Doby integrating the American League in 1947. Of course, Jackie Robinson, April 15th. Larry Doby, a few months later, a younger man from Newark and not the Jackie Robinson. He hadn't gone to college and all that, and goes to the Cleveland Indians and they turn their back on him in the clubhouse and all that stuff. But the next year, the guy's a center fielder, and Cleveland ends up winning the World Series. You know, so but we do acknowledge tomorrow the day Larry Doby broke in.
Yeah, that was a really big deal, and it was you know, obviously overshadowed by Jackie Robinson. He was the first,
right.
and he was the perfect guy to do it. And he was in Brooklyn Dodgers, you know, and in New York, and got all the publicity and absolutely, you know, should have right to this day where, you know, guys want to wear his uniform or everybody wears it on a certain day and everything else with Jackie Robinson. But, you know, you still had to break that color barrier in the American League. And like you say, Larry Doby took an awful lot of heat.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Jackie showed up and the racism went away. It was still very, very prevalent, especially in those days. I mean, some horrible things happened and Larry Doby just, you know, stood firm and went through a really tough first year, and then boom, he was a perennial, you know, tremendous player. And you know, in those days, the Indians were very good, and he got a lot of good exposure.
Yeah, they liked him in 1948. They said, well, maybe he can play. So that was the way it was. Which leads me to this. I don't know if you just see this. Angel Hernandez has sued baseball and Joe Torre specifically. Claiming that he's been discriminated against as a minority and they won't promote him and all this kind of stuff?
I just noticed that on the wires this morning. I don't know a lot about it. You know, I'm not in a position to comment on it. There's obviously a lot of stuff that's gone on that people aren't aware of. But, you know, he needs to make this clear, you know, to Joe Torre and everybody else exactly what's going on. You know, he's considered a little bit of a loose cannon of an umpire. I don't know if he has a lot of respect from the players. But, you know, if he's got a valid point here, we'll be paying more attention to him than we ever have before.
Yeah, and I think he's sort of the point man for this thing. But he's saying minorities in general, if you go back to see how many have done the World Series and how many have been crew chiefs and all that kind of stuff, and that's where it's lacking. So I think he's sort of taken the point on this, even though if you had to say, should he be promoted, he's kind of one of the, you know, probably one of the more criticized umpires in baseball. But he's trying to bring the point up. I see that.
Yeah, he's probably not the right guy to do it, although it's not like, you know, we have a ton of minority umpires. But, you know, to say, well, let's put him, you know, in the World Series rotation and help make things right, that wouldn't sit well with a lot of players because, you know, like you say, he's not among the most respected of umpires.
Yeah, Angel Hernandez. Well, all right, it's July 4th, and I played, as we always do, the Ernie Harwell Ode to Baseball, which I love that poem that he did. And he talks about July 4th and doubleheaders.
Yeah.
Now, hey, look, and I say this every year, so let me get on my soapbox. You know, it's an $11 billion industry. It's July 4th, the celebration of the country and all this stuff and parades and carnivals and barbecues. Can't baseball give you something other than a new uniform that you could buy and a new hat?
Yeah. Well, you know, Marty, in 1939, in a doubleheader between the Red Sox and the Philadelphia A's, Jim Tabor, who I know you used to hang out with, hit four home runs in that doubleheader. It was one of the great 4th of July performances, probably second only to our own Dave Rigetti, who pitched a no-hitter for the Yanks in 1983 at Yankee Stadium against the Red Sox. It pitched a no-hitter, struck out Wade Boggs to end it. You know, doesn't get much better than that. And a great moment there. And steaming heat, and he went all the way, obviously.
And the birthday of George Steinbrenner.
That's right. Yeah, they were both celebrating. And I know Rigetti was left off the All-Star team that year, and he was really steamed about it because his mother's birthday happened to fall on the day of the All-Star game, and it was going to be a nice present for her. And Ron Guidry, who is a teammate of Rigetti's, got hurt, and Rigetti thought, well, I'm in now. But they chose Tippy Martinez instead.
Wow.
And he is always a little upset about that.
Now, that was
83.
So I'm just thinking 82. Let's see, National League. That would have been Whitey Herzog, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Well, that's the American League would have been Harvey, the wall banger.
Harvey, that's right. The Milwaukee Brewers, yeah.
Harvey Keene. All right. So maybe he didn't pick Rigetti. Tippy Martinez is always known for picking off three runners in a row. When Len Sicata was put in the catch in the 10th inning, and he'd never caught before. So he put three on, and he picked every one off. Len Sicata never caught a ball. That was it.
Amazing. Right. That's an amazing. That's such a baseball thing, isn't it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
The other thought, I want to acknowledge something that you did, which I thought was absolutely beautiful, and that was the obituary you wrote yesterday about Daryl Imhoff. And if you'd like to comment, Bruce, I thought it was just wonderful the way you wrote it and the comments of the people who are still with us to talk about it. But talk just a little bit about Imhoff, this great Cal basketball player, and it's such an unusual way he got on the team, and Pete Newell made him special.
Yeah, he was a kid from L.A. who was a real gangly and raw and not much of a player. He wasn't recruited by Cal. And when he showed up at Cal as a forestry major, this is fall of 1956, he just sort of walked into Pete Newell's office and said, hey, I'm kind of interested in playing basketball. And then Pete said, well, the first thing is, well, who are you? all Pete knew was that he was tall.
Yeah.
He's 6'10". And he's a nice kid. And so Pete said, well, you know, we'll put him on the freshman team and see what happens. And he was just terrible. I got a quote from Earl Schultz, who was a guy who played for Cal then. He said, I can't believe they gave this guy a uniform. He can't shoot. He can't jump. What the heck's he doing out here? And for his sophomore year, he wasn't very good. But he showed a few flashes as a sophomore that made Newell think that this guy could be a big-time defensive player and rebounder. And in his junior year, all of a sudden he takes off. He's the center for Cal. There are a bunch of ragtag guys, none of whom really Pete recruited, but they fit so well. And, of course, Newell was a genius of a coach, and they wind up with Imhoff at center. They wind up beating Cincinnati with Oscar Robertson in the semifinals of the Final Four, and then West Virginia with Jerry West in the finals. They win the whole thing, and Imhoff tips in a missed shot of his own with 17 seconds left to put Cal up by three, and Pete always said, you know, if Imhoff doesn't make that shot, Jerry West is going to beat us. That's everybody knew that. He was the greatest clutch shooter, really, that ever lived. And so Imhoff, you know, amazing guy. He came back in 1960 with the Cal team. That was an even better team, some said, and they went all the way to the finals again, and they lost to a great Ohio State team with John Havlicek and Jerry Lucas and and Larry Siegfried, even Bobby Knight was on the team.
Wow.
So Imhoff went on to play in the pros for 12 years. He had the lamentable distinction of being the other center on the other team when Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points. And all of his old Cal guys used to rib him about that. He says, well, we're so proud of you tonight, especially defense. What a defensive effort you put out there. And, you know, they sent him a telegram, and he was really steamed about that. But it's a good joke that the guys played on him. But a real good man, Marty, and had a heck of a career against all odds.
Well, I'm glad you could. It was a beautiful story. If anyone had missed it, sfgate.com, check it out. But Bruce, and he held Wilt the next day. He held Wilt to 54, and he thought he did pretty well.
Yeah, in those days, that was about his average. So,
well, you did a great job with it, as only you could, so I appreciate it. Well, here we are, July 4th, and if you're leading the league or leading your division July 4th, they say you're in. The Brewers, I'm not sold yet, but, boy, the Cubs can't get out of their way. But the other two, Dodgers and kind of Washington, I assume they look pretty solid.
Yeah, Washington, it's funny. They've had so many horrendous breakdowns in the bullpen, but you look there, they're still 8 games up on, you know, Atlanta. Yeah. Atlanta's not going to catch them, and the Mets are 10.5 out. They're just, you know, last night they've got Cespedes in left field. He can barely run. He's playing through the hamstring, which is never a good idea, and he messes up a play that should have ended the inning, and they lose. So Washington's, they're going to get a reliever, and they're in. And I think the Dodgers are probably the class of the West. I think the Cubs are going to wind up winning that division. I mean, there's a little bit of discord on the team. You know, the Montero thing, he ripped Arrieta for not holding guys on. It's a different year, but I think the talent's going to prove to be override the Milwaukee thing there.
That'll be pretty good. You know, as I always say, you hang around long enough, and all of a sudden you believe you can win. By the end of July, say from the All-Star break to the end of July, 5 or 6 teams will disappear. And that
yes.
that usually is sort of the dividing line. All right, have a great 4th. What's up for you on the 4th? I know, is Molly back east, I think, as you said?
Well, Molly's in Costa Rica on the Half Moon Bay Senior Tour.
Martha's back.
At the high school. And Martha's in Kansas City.
That's right, Kansas City for Martha.
We've got a couple of great granddaughters there, and I wasn't able to join her. But so they're out having a blast all over the world, and I'm here in the living room waiting for the Giants. could be worse.
It could be. You could be sitting here at 7 a.m. Looking at Raff and Steve Fishman. So
that's true, although Raff's my guy.
I love it.
Wouldn't be so bad either.
No, I love it. I love being here today. It was great driving in and everything. Bruce, have a great day. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and I always enjoy it.
So do I. Thanks so much, Marty.
All right. That is the great Bruce Jenkins. More coming up on this 4th of July right after this.